we always get sold this binary choice. It's that, hey, we've got to go fight them over there so you don't fight them over here. We've got to be all in, whatever all in is, whether that's giving every last penny that we have to Ukraine, or whether that now is like, well, we need to move as many combat battle groups and as many, you know, aircraft carriers and naval vessels over to the Middle East as possible. Like, we got to be all in. And to me, that's just a very juvenile way of looking at these conflicts. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now. From the land of the free
and the brave, USA. Hi, welcome back. I am your host, Mike Spiraza, here with a special guest, Joe Kent, a GOP-endorsed candidate in Washington District 3, and also a retired Green Beret combat veteran, and Gold Star husband. Joe, I'm excited to have you on today because this is a topic that, to be honest, what we've seen this past weekend is absolutely horrific. And I wanted to get with somebody that knows, you know, the Middle East, that knows this type of combat and knows what's going on here. So first off, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Great to be with you.
So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Israel. And I don't mean this specific attack, but the issues between Israel and groups like Hamas and in the Gaza Strip there. Can you start way before this attack on what's really happening there and what's been happening there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a historic conflict. I mean, the Israel and Palestine have been in conflict for quite a while. But I mean, I think for the sake of our conversations, for folks who don't follow the Middle East incredibly carefully, the Palestinians have essentially been divided. And I'm speaking in simplistic terms. It's far more complicated than this. But the Palestinians are simply kind of cut in half. There's the Gaza Strip. And that's the Hamas-controlled area. And that's really what's been in the news now for the last, you know, couple of days since this horrific attack. And then there's the Palestinian Authority that's over on the West Bank. And that's a separate group of Palestinians, a little bit more secular. Hamas technically has been democratically elected. They are a terrorist organization, as we can see by their actions this past weekend. And so the violence between the Israelis and the Palestinians, it's been ongoing for years. There's been different, you know, upticks here and there. I think this terrorist attack right here is very significant considering the timing and then also the hand of the Iranians. Every time Iran gets more access to capital, like Joe Biden gave them, they fund their proxies. And depending on wherever they think the most they're going to get the most bang for their buck, that's where they fund. Well, we had a lot of boots on the ground in Iraq. They would fund their Iraqi proxies to go conduct attacks against U.S. service members. They killed probably around 1,000 service members in that entire conflict. They continue to be one of the biggest threats to American service members in Iraq and in Syria. But right now, what the Iranians are trying to do is they're attempting to create a wedge in between Israel and a lot of the Arab states that had been brought into the fold of the Abraham Accords. So the Abraham Accords, for folks who don't know, this was essentially a diplomatic coup pulled off by the Trump administration. For years, we were told by all the so-called Middle Eastern experts that there could be no peace in the Middle East unless we address the Israel-Palestine issue. And what the Trump administration did was they came in and they said, well, that conventional wisdom has done nothing but fail for the past 50 or 60 years, and it's gotten us nowhere. So how about this? How about we look for common ground that the Arab Gulf countries have with Israel? And what's the biggest thing they have in common is that they all view Iran as an existential threat, because Iran is an existential threat to Israel, but also to Saudi Arabia and to the vast majority of the OPEC countries, with the exception of the Qataris. And there's some other wiggle room there, some of the other countries. But by and large, this created a coalition, brought about a historic peace agreement, the Abraham Accords. And now we have the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is getting ready to move under that umbrella as well and completely open up diplomatic relations with Israel. And this is historic, bring about a lot of peace in the area, but it's a threat to the Iranians. So the second that the Biden administration came in, they wanted to get back into the horrific Iran deal to get Iran the ability to be on track to get a nuclear weapon, and then also to just free up a lot more of their assets. And again, when Iran gets access to cash and the capital, what they do is they fund their surrogates and their proxies. And so right now, what Iran is trying to do is they're trying to get their number one surrogate and proxy in the Palestinian region, Hamas, to attack Israel, to provoke a response from Israel that's going to galvanize Arab and Muslim support back around this Palestinian issue. They don't like it. The Iranians don't like it. that the Trump administration was able to take the Palestinian issue off the table. They want that front and center because it becomes a very hot button issue in the Muslim world and requires, really, due to popular consent, it's going to force a lot of the Arab leaders to get behind Hamas. They don't want to get behind. I think most of them probably do not want to get behind Hamas, but there is a real issue. This is a galvanizing issue. And so I think we could fall into the trap very easily of allowing this war to spread. That's definitely what the Iranians want. So I think the way that we go about approaching the next steps in the next couple of days, the next couple of weeks, it's going to be very, very critical. I think we're going to hear a lot of crazy talk from folks in Washington, D.C. that's very simplistic. And this is a very complicated issue. It's going to require a lot of cool heads and level heads in order to make it so that we chart a path forward that doesn't get us sucked into a wider regional conflict.
So I'm going to get into Biden a little bit later because I have some questions for you on his response so far. And I'm also going to talk to you a little later on the media's response, including social media response, because that's been quite interesting. And our college campuses across the country right now are battling between both sides. But let's talk a little bit about what transpired on Saturday and Sunday. I'm not a veteran like you, Joe, so you probably have seen things and dealt with things that I couldn't even imagine. But I mean, what these videos and these pictures that are coming out of Israel right now are just disgusting. And that is not a war between two countries, right? This is not combat to combat, soldier to soldier. They are beheading children. They're burning children alive. They're killing mothers and fathers. They're taking people hostage. This is sickening, sickening stuff. And honestly, this is my first go around at seeing a conflict like this. It's been hard for me to be on social media, Joe, because this is one of the biggest disasters I've ever seen. It's disgusting.
It is. It's really horrific. I would just remind everyone that when the bullets start flying and the heat of combat happens, the first casualty is always the truth. And both sides are going to use horrific images in order to advance their cause. Now, what Hamas did is absolutely despicable. Hamas has been a despicable, horrible terrorist organization for a very, very long time. But there is a media strategy at play here by both sides. So that's just that I would caution people with that. Yep. When you see these atrocities put up on social media, remember that one side or the other, they are attempting to get a reaction from you, particularly from those of us here in the West, because there's actions they want us to take. But what I think is really key for people to really focus in on, especially here from an American perspective, you hear Republicans like myself all the time talking about our wide open southern border and how many illegal immigrants have come into our country and the fentanyl issues. And our southern border is wide open because of Joe Biden's policies and the Democrat policies. And if you take a look at Israel, Israel arguably has one of the most secure and heavily fortified and heavily surveilled borders in planet Earth in modern human history. And a small group of terrorists, really armed with very rudimentary weapons, were able to penetrate that border, and they were able in the course of probably about 24 hours to kill well over 800 Israelis. And Israel is a tiny country. If you make the comparison of how many Israelis got killed to America, that would be the equivalent of about 300,000 Americans getting killed in about 24 hours by, you know, terrorists. And if you look at the fact that we have a wide open southern border, we've had 10 million, we think, we don't really know the number, 10 million illegal immigrants come into our country since Biden came in. This should be a wake up call to every single American as to what's happening in our own backyard. But yeah, like you said, everything that's happened in Israel over the last couple of days, absolutely horrific. And look, Hamas wants a reaction. Israel has to respond, though. Israel's in a bad position, a horrible position. They just had 800 of their civilians killed. There's hostages now that have been taken back into the Gaza Strip. There's been confirmation that Americans are amongst those hostages. So now, obviously, we're in a very delicate position. Now, the Israelis and the Palestinians and even Hezbollah, they have a long history of negotiating and doing prisoner swaps. And I know here in the West, we're supposed to say, we never negotiate with terrorists. We're going to go in and fight to the last. That mentality is all well and good, but it's just simply not realistic. The best outcome as far as hostages go is that there is some form of a prisoner swap. Because right now, any force going into Gaza, that is going to be an incredibly bloody and incredibly difficult environment to fight in. I'm sure Israel at some point is going to go in. Because look, if you're Israel, you can't let this stand. This can't be business as usual, where you do a couple counter strikes and then, you know, you go to the negotiating. That's just not going to cut it. I've heard people saying like, oh, they should just be negotiated or whatever. That's not realistic either. Like, Israel can't just take this one on the chin. I do think something that's going to develop probably over the next couple months and maybe even longer is what the heck happened that led to this massive intelligence failure? Because by any standard, I mean, Mossad, and I was in special forces. I did a little bit in the CIA as a paramilitary operations officer. Mossad is the gold standard for human intelligence. They're the gold standard for a lot of technical collection. Like, they are viewed as being a very competent intelligence service, to put it mildly, between the Mossad, between their defense intelligence agencies, all the support that we give them on the technical side, and the fact that we also help them with some of the national level collection platforms as well. To me, it's a big unknown that I would love to know the answer of. I don't know if we'll ever get a straight answer, but how did they miss this? I mean, the Israeli border is heavily fortified, and Hamas penetrated it, you know, by cutting holes in the border wall and then flying over it in these like hang glider contraptions they made. Yeah. If you would have told me they were going to penetrate the border of Israel with hang gliders and, you know, little parachute things 2 weeks ago, I'd have been like, there's no way. Those guys would get slaughtered the second they crossed over into Israeli airspace. But that didn't happen. So this big intel gap really, I mean, makes us wonder. It makes us question everything. And again, I want to focus internally on America. It's like, if that happened over there, with as unsecure as our country is right now and as distracted as our federal and national security apparatus is with, you know, chasing down grandmothers in MAGA hats as opposed to looking at actual threats, like, just look at how vulnerable we are here.
And I wanted to bring that up. So obviously Egypt has said there was intel, Joe, that they had, that they thought something was coming. I don't think they maybe knew it was this, but something was coming. Two questions, I guess. Should American intel have had something on that, Joe? And I know that's not our area over there, but it seems like America knows a lot about what's going on across the country. Should we have known that? And then there's also reports coming out that some of our weaponry that we left in Afghanistan or that have given to Ukraine, I can't confirm that. I'm going to ask you that. Is that true or possible? And if so, who's held accountable for that? Because somebody better be.
You know, I don't know the answer if we should have known that this was going to happen in Israel. But when I just think off the top of my head, you know, keeping everything unclassified, I mean, we have that whole area, and it's a small area too. Like, the Gaza Strip is very small. I think it's like 26 miles long and like 3 miles wide. I mean, that thing is blanketed with technical surveillance. It's blanketed with satellites. So the fact that someone didn't pick up at least the troop, I mean, because there was some degree of a troop buildup, right? They actually had to move a bunch of armed fighters in pickup trucks, motorcycles, these hang glider things up to the border. And so I don't see how the Hamas staging for that wasn't picked up. I don't understand that. I don't understand how U.S. intelligence didn't pick up on it. And I most certainly don't understand how Israeli intelligence didn't pick up on that. So, you know, it's not our border. So, like, it's not our duty necessarily, but this is a major issue. You know, it'd be interesting to see the details of exactly what the Egyptians provided to the Israelis. I don't know if we're ever going to actually see that, you know, brought to light anytime soon, because I'm sure Israel is going to want to try and hide that because it's very embarrassing for them. And it will show, I mean, they have already displayed where the holes in their intelligence collection capabilities are. Yep. As far as the weapons go, look, America, we have made that entire region awash with U.S. hardware. We've had to equip the Iraqis about two different times. After we toppled the regime of Saddam Hussein, we spent trillions outfitting the Iraqi army with the latest and greatest American arms. And then promptly, the second that ISIS came up and rolled across the berm with a bunch of dilapidated Soviet equipment, that great Iraqi army that we trained, they threw their weapons in the dirt and they ran. With few exceptions, the Iraqi special forces held out, the Kurds held out, but the majority of the Iraqi fighting force threw all their U.S.-made gear on the ground. ISIS captured a ton of it. Some of these Iranian militias captured a ton of it too. And then there was the horrible surrender in Afghanistan that we had, where Biden left billions of dollars of top American hardware into the hands of the Taliban. And we literally, during the withdrawal, we watched the Taliban drive a lot of this hardware into Iran. So really, if you just look at the failed experiments in nation building that America's had over the last 20 years in Iraq and Afghanistan, it should surprise no one that this weaponry is now showing up in places like the Gaza Strip.
Now, stay with me. I want to come back and I want to talk a little bit about America's response to this and then social media response to it. In our final segment, I want to talk a little bit about your run for Congress as well, Joe. So, folks, stay with us. We will be right back with more with Joe Kent. All right. So then I'm just going to say 3, 2, 1, and we'll go again.
Cool.
All right. This shit's scary, man. Scares the hell out of me, I tell you.
It's wild, man.
Yeah. And most people don't care to listen to someone like you who actually knows what's going on. They just want to throw their opinion out there, which scares the hell out of me even further, including our president. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. All right, welcome back. Mike Spiraza here again with Joe Kent. We are finishing our conversation on what has happened in Israel at the Gaza Strip. And to what we said before, Joe, it's just horrifying. It's horrifying to think about that this is going on in the world today. I look at America and, you know, as much as we say certain things about the border and crime, no one in America has seen anything close to what just happened in Israel. And you know, that. Thank God, I say this all the time, thank God I live in the United States of America, because it is truly the greatest country in the world. But I do want to go now to the response a little bit. Obviously, Israel has waged war against Hamas. And before I go there, Joe, I think a topic to bring up, you know, there's innocent people in Palestine too, right? Not every Palestinian, not even close, is a Hamas terrorist, right? I think that's being lost a little bit. You know, pray for the innocent people on both sides, because there are very, very innocent people on both sides. And a lot of innocent casualties, I'm sure, Joe, you will know this, I'm sure, right, will happen on both sides throughout the next weeks, months, and maybe years.
100%. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the Gaza Strip is about as big as Washington, D.C. proper, but it has almost three times the amount of people. And it's like 2 million people. I believe Gaza is one of the most densely urban populated cities in the entire world. And so once the bullets start flying there, yeah, not everyone who gets caught in the crossfire is going to be a Hamas militant. And the same thing on the Israeli side. Hamas deliberately targeted Israeli civilians who had nothing to do with the Israeli military. So this is why war is horrible, because war is never cut and dry. We don't go out to a field somewhere and square off anymore. That just doesn't happen. We fight amongst civilian populations, and the combat that's about to happen, I think, inside Gaza, is going to be the most bloody combat we've seen really since Fallujah. But with the Fallujah scenario, we let most of the civilians out of there before the fighting began. This is going to be absolutely horrific.
Now, let's talk about America's response. Joe Biden, a couple days late, decided to come talk Monday or Tuesday, I think it was. I'm not picking on Joe Biden because I don't believe in Joe Biden. I have never believed in Joe Biden. But what bothers me, Joe, is you go from a Donald Trump, like him or hate him, the world respected him. How do I know that? This kind of stuff didn't happen over the last 4 years, right? The opposite happened. And then we look now and we look at Joe coming out. He's bumbling around. He can't speak. The podium, you know, it's like, then he starts yelling, then he starts whispering. There's no feeling of, okay, this guy's got it. I have a lot of confidence here. And Joe, that really scares the hell out of me. To your border point before, we don't know who's crossed our border, but also on the world stage, this is now the second conflict in less than 2 years where America's getting involved. Yeah, American troops aren't there. I'm going to say this for Joe, yet. My fear is that we get involved in there in both of these scenarios.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, I don't think anyone right now is calling for U.S. boots on the ground. A lot of the neocons are immediately calling for strikes inside of Iran, which we have enough troops in the region, especially Iraq. People tend to forget about Iraq, but our largest embassy is in Baghdad, and it is well within rocket range, small arms fire range. That embassy has been besieged before, as recently as a few years ago. So we have a lot of people that if the neocons get their way, Lindsey Graham and these guys, and we start conducting strikes against Iran, it's going to be a hot war where U.S. Service members are directly involved. But what people also have to remember is that we have a lot of Americans inside Israel, and we also have American hostages. So that's why you have seen some movement of troops to get close to Israel, because we have an obligation to rescue our hostages or to conduct an evacuation of American citizens. So this could go to, you know, hey, we didn't intend for there to be U.S. boots on the ground, but, you know, law of unintended consequences. Once the bullets start flying, you never know what's going to happen. Now, the U.S. response, I feel like we always get sold this binary choice. It's that, hey, we've got to go fight them over there so you don't fight them over here. We've got to be all in. Whatever all in is, whether that's giving every last penny that we have to Ukraine, or whether that now is like, well, we need to move as many combat battle groups and as many, you know, aircraft carriers and naval vessels over to the Middle East as possible. Like, we got to be all in. And to me, that's just a very juvenile way of looking at these conflicts. President Trump was effective. I mean, a lot of folks just focus on Trump's personality and his bravado. And I think some of that is true. He has a strong personality. But what President Trump understood at a very basic level was leverage. We still have leverage over a lot of what's happening in the Middle East. Now, we have less leverage under Biden because of a couple of different factors. But the first one is we are still reliant on the Middle East for our energy. Biden killed off U.S. energy independence, and we are still at the mercy of OPEC. And so places like the Straits of Hormuz, the way that the vast majority of petro moves out of the Persian Gulf and into the world market, that Straits of Hormuz is in Iran's backyard. Iran can shut down the Straits of Hormuz, or at least turn it into a shooting gallery really, really quick, and mess with how much oil we get. And they can mess with our energy, our ability to get energy here in this country. Now, just a few years ago, President Trump had us as a net exporter of energy. So we are energy independent. Everybody remembers what the gas prices were a couple of years ago. So that helped American citizens with their everyday life. But also, it took away the leverage that the Iranians, the OPEC cartel, that all these guys in the Middle East have with us. So when President Trump would go to the negotiating table with Middle Eastern countries, he was in a position of power and a position of strength because he had done that very basic thing. Same thing applies to Vladimir Putin. The reason why Putin didn't invade Ukraine under President Trump is, honestly, I don't think he could afford to do it. Trump went over there and he held the Germans and the Europeans accountable for buying Russian petro, and he brought down the value of Russian petro because he had flooded the market with cheap U.S. energy. So that's one of the first things that we could do. We can also start going after all the different ways that Iran gets a good deal of their funds to pay their proxies like Hamas. First and foremost, the government of Iraq. Now, most Americans that have been in the government for a long time, they don't want to admit that we completely and totally failed in Iraq, and they continue to pour money at it. Like I said, our biggest embassy is there. Within just this last year, the government of Iran has used the government of Iraq to circumvent sanctions and to get their oil and petroleum entered into the standard economy of oil trading, and they've made at least $10 billion off of that. Qatar is holding a massive amount of funds for Iran. They help Iran wash a lot of their money. We have a major base in Qatar. We pay the Qataris a ton of money in foreign aid, and we also allow them to continue to do business. If we cut off the funding, the foreign aid money from the government of Iraq, they would be screwed. Qatar would be in a very difficult position. So that's the first thing that I would do. Once I got us to be energy independent, it's going to take a minute because Biden's done so much damage. But I would immediately go to the Qataris. I would immediately go to the Iraqis, and I'd make an example of them. I would say, look, you're not going to get one more penny from America as long as you're supporting Iran. As a matter of fact, any money that you have that's in your accounts right now that originates from Iran, we're going to freeze all that. I'd be saying the same thing, too, to the Chinese as well. I'd say, hey, look, we're going to cut you guys off from U.S. capital if you're continuing to fund what Iran is doing right now. So that is some leverage that we can use without getting us sucked into this conflict, without having us have to go all in. And to be quite honest with you, these scenarios, using our economic strength and using diplomacy, that is far more scary to the Iranians than us doing strikes. Because if we start doing strikes, the good deal of the region is going to be galvanized against us, and we're going to get sucked back into the Middle Eastern quicksand that we are in, you know, for 20 plus years. I mean, basically, all of our enemies in the Middle East, whether it's the Iranians, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, they saw that, look, if they can get us to commit ground forces, that they can get us to commit, that we will stay and we will bleed for a very long time. And bleeding us dry is really the overall goal of the vast majority of our enemies, to include China. So the Chinese can sit back and they can watch us get sucked back into this war. They can maneuver on Taiwan, or they can just watch us bleed out all the economic power that we have. So I personally think, don't play that game at all. Use the economic leverage points that we have right now. The Israelis don't need a ton of help from us. The military assistance that we give the Israelis, that is essentially on auto pay. Everybody remembers all the arguments we've had over Ukraine funding back and forth. We don't have to do that with Israel, because the funding that Israel gets from America, it's basically U.S. doctrine that we have to give the Israelis what's called a qualitative military advantage. So that's already on auto pay. It's basically renewed once every 6 years. So that's not going to come back up and be a debate until 2026. So the Israelis have the money and the material that they need from us. they need us to help out with the external stuff, with the diplomacy and with the economics. And we are really not in a position to do that, I don't think, until we get back to being energy independent here and we can start leveraging that energy independence against the folks in the Middle East so that we at least can go and approach them from a position of strength. And then again, I go back to our border. I mean, every single enemy, to include the Iranians, to include radical jihadists, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, whatever, they're going to exploit our border. They're already here. There's no possible way we've had 10 million come into our country and those elements are not already active within America. We've really got to get serious about understanding who's in our country, running these people down and getting them the heck out of our country.
And before we get to the media, I think me as a, again, a person that has no military background and honestly not a lot of knowledge on the Middle East, and I'm glad I have you because you know what you're talking about. But I look at it like this, Joe. I look at the president of the United States and I expect strength and I expect power. That's what I expect as an American. Why? Because the world runs as America runs. Let's just be honest about that. And when I see him walk away without taking one question, not one, right? Yeah. Turns his back and prances around like he's 95 years old, which he is. And then not the first speech he gave, he barely, actually he didn't, it wasn't barely, he didn't mention Iran once. And again, I'm not trying to have our president and our military play their cards, but we got to start calling this stuff what it is. You made a deal with Iran and people are all up in arms about the dollar amount. I don't care if it was a dollar or if it was $100 billion. You caved and you were weak to Iran. That's what happened. It doesn't matter the dollar amount. You are weak when you do a 5-for-5 swap and you say, we'll give you this money back, whatever it was. That to me is very concerning, Joe.
Incredibly concerning. And look, we've got to realize that there are folks, the vast majority of Biden's national security team, they were Obama's national security team. When you look at Jake Sullivan, when you look at Blinken, these guys were in the Obama administration and all the underlings below them, whose names we don't know, that are just faceless bureaucrats, they brought them all back in. And these guys, their life's work has been the Iran deal. They truly believe that if we start treating Iran just like they're any other normal, rational country and not a country that's been at war with us since 1979, that took American hostages, that killed 1,000 Americans in Iraq, that if we just start treating these guys like they're Switzerland or like they're some European country and we allow ties to become normalized and we allow them a pathway to a nuclear weapon or nuclear power, that suddenly they'll just become like this flowering democracy. It's basically the same mentality that the Bushites had with Iraq. Like, hey, if we just go and topple Saddam, we'll be greeted as liberators. Next thing you know, this place is going to be, you know, the next Paris, and they're going to embrace Jeffersonian democracy. It's dumb. And look, the thing is, we in America have a horrible track record of when we get these dumb ideas about how we're going to topple a regime, either by giving them a ton of money or by going in with force, we have a really hard time admitting that we are wrong. And that's what we're seeing right now with the Biden administration. And these people simply aren't serious. I mean, under the Obama administration, this is exactly what happened. Every time Iran got a little bit of access to money, every time they got a little bit of sanctions relief, they immediately funded their proxies. They've lit Lebanon on fire. They've lit Iraq on fire. They've killed Americans. They've been active in Yemen to try and provoke the Saudis. I mean, look, there's a time and a place for diplomacy. There's a time and a place for negotiations. And I don't think we need to be in an all-out war with Iran by any means. This is where the Trump doctrine was really effective. I mean, Trump waited until Iran killed an American under his watch. And then Trump killed Qasem Soleimani, who was their top military commander. But he did that and said, no, that's all we're going to do. When John Bolton and a bunch of the neocons tried to push him to take the fight into Iran, he said, no, we're not going to do that. I'm going to cut off their access to capital. I'm going to make us energy independent. We're not getting sucked into this nonsense. That's the approach that we need to take. But right now, the Biden administration and the Democrats have shown that they are completely incapable of any kind of strong leadership, especially when it comes to Iran. It's very dangerous that you have so many people in his national security apparatus that, again, their life's work is this Iran deal. They can't just wash their hands of it and say, you know what, we got this wrong. We need to try a different approach. They can't do that. They double and they triple down on this failure.
And before we go to our next break, I do want to bring up, you brought up the Lindsey Grahams of the world too. And this is where I think it's both sides, obviously, right? You have these warmongers that just love war. They love spending money in Ukraine. They're going to love spending more money and time and hopefully, you know, hopefully not, I should say, not actually getting boots in the ground. That's a fear of mine, because I think that's what these people do. You know, Joe, how do we deal with those types of people? Obviously, voting them out may help, but I don't know that many people across America have the knowledge or care to listen to Joe Kent and what you know. Like that to me is a problem in itself.
It is. I mean, again, we get sold the binary choice. So like if you define yourself as a Republican, then like you're kind of told that you have to immediately say, like, I stand with Israel, whatever they need, let's start kicking Iran's butt. Like this won't stand. And if you're on the other side, you know, you're told like, well, okay, maybe we need to just go with the Biden plan with giving Iran whatever they want. Like, we don't have to settle for those two horrible choices. We can come up with other options. I always say, look at the leverage points. What's our leverage? What's the enemy's leverage? Hamas right now, for a horrible, horrific, and as bad as they are, they are really good at using what leverage they have. That's why they're taking hostages. That's why they're doing these low scale, low tech, terrorist style hit and run attacks. They're using all their leverage. Iran has been sanctioned six ways to Sunday. They've been at war with us and pretty much the entire West since 1979. They're bad actors for sure, but they're using every bit of their leverage. Why would we not do the same? And we know exactly what happens when we get sucked into these wars. So I think it's really important for us to call out people like Lindsey Graham and his ilk that are just saying, like, you know, maneuver the ships over there and start kicking butt. It's like, hey, man, when was the last time that actually worked? If you can explain to me and you can tell me when that strategy has worked in the Middle East, then maybe I'll consider your course of action. But until then, I'm going to go with what I think is the most responsible way forward, and that's using our leverage, making sure that we do not get bogged down. Don't fall for the trap of getting sucked back into this. Assess our leverage and use it appropriately. And then also maximize our strength. We have the ability to be very strong. Biden has hurt that, but we've got to get back to being energy, a net exporter of energy and energy independent, and really just avoiding the trap of getting sucked into this. Because look, the military industrial complex, they, once the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan wound down, they were looking for the next war. They wanted it to be Ukraine for a while. But look, the entire military industrial complex is geared right now to fight in the Middle East, to fight terrorists and to fight insurgents. And there's been plans on the books for a long time to go fight in Iran. So if you give the military industrial complex just a little bit of a window, they are going to do everything they can to blow that window wide open and jam another Middle Eastern war down our throats.
All right, stay with us. One more segment, Joe. I want to talk a little bit about the media. I want to talk a little bit about the media blowing up what Trump said this week, too. They had a field day with that, of course. And then I want to talk a little bit about your race in Washington and what you think of the overall state of America outside of these conflicts that we've talked about today. Folks, we'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, and then we'll just go right into it, okay? 3, 2, 1. All right, welcome back. Mike Spiraza here still with Green Beret, Joe Kent. Joe, I want to talk a little bit about the media response to this conflict because, quite frankly, it's making me sick. You looked at President Trump spoke this week and essentially called, you know, this terrorist group smart because they are attacking and they are getting the message across they want to get across. And I've said this a long time. You look at these cartels in Mexico. Everybody, I guess maybe most people don't understand, those people are some of the smartest people in the world. They knew the time to strike, Joe, and it was when Joe Biden came into office. They opened up the border, and the cartels walked in with drugs, right? Hamas seemed to have done the same thing. They saw maybe a weakening border, and they made a choice. I'm not saying these people are smart people that I want to hang out with, but I think President Trump has a point that they knew what they were doing in this aspect, and the world kind of now is with their hands up, like, what happened? You know, they're not people you hang out with, they're not people you support, but we have to treat these people as they are, and they're dangerous lunatics and evil terrorists is what they are at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny to me, and I've gotten criticized for this before when I said that Vladimir Putin was, you know, a thug, but he could be a reasonable thug, and he's a thug, but he's a smart guy. Like, yep. People like lose their mind. Like, again, it's that black and white thinking where everybody thinks that we're living in like an Avengers movie where there's the good guys and there's the bad guys, and the bad guys are just evil, but they're also stupid. Like, that's not the way the real world works. If you're evil and stupid, you don't last very long, especially in a place like the Gaza Strip. You know, like, look, Hamas, what they pulled off, it's horrific, but it's very impressive. And these are very smart. These are very cunning people. All the dumb ones got killed a long time ago. I mean, we used to say that once the wars in Iraq drug on for a while, I mean, past like 2004, I was over there almost every year. I mean, me and my buddies were like, yeah, all the dumb ones, they die pretty quick. You know, the guys that were having a hard time locating, the guys that are a constant thorn in our side, a lot of the Iranians, these dudes are smart. I mean, they are, again, I don't want to hang out with them. I don't condone what they do. So when Trump says things like that, again, this is just Trump saying, and Trump does this all the time. He says something that's true. And then people either they can't comprehend it because they refuse to think past their own, you know, their own knowledge, or they just freak out because, oh my gosh, how can you say that? And then they think like simpletons. So yeah, and the media coverage has been really, look, the media, there's some of the media and the mainstream media is some of the worst people in the world. They love war. They love carnage. If it bleeds, it leads. I mean, like that's the way these people operate. So of course they're all going to flood over to Gaza and they're going to show the worst atrocities possible. Both sides know that. Hamas knows that. Hamas is doing evil, horrific stuff, to be sure. And they are going to show that when they want to show it. And then the same thing, the Israelis, I don't think the Israelis are out there. They're not out there deliberately targeting women and children, but horrific things will happen there too. And the Israelis will either show it or not show it. The media will attempt to provoke a reaction from us in the West because they want this war as bad as the neocons do.
And I think that to finalize the Israel and Hamas conflict, I just think too, what makes me sick, Joe, is you look at our colleges, you got pro-Israel, pro-Palestine people arguing on college campuses, right? You have the media just taking everything and running. You have people like Rashida Tlaib that will not come out and just simply put, say, this is an atrocity and it's sickening. We have some major issues in our country, and unity, which what Joe Biden ran on, I'm going to unify us, I'm going to bring us together. It's not happening. It's not even close to happening. And that to me is scary, because a divided America, Joe, is going to be the death of America, in my opinion, if we don't get this right. And again, to my point before, you can be pro-Israel or pro-Palestine and just come out and say Hamas is a terrorist evil organization and you can never do this, no matter where it is in the world, whether it's in the Gaza Strip, if it's in Russia, Ukraine. We cannot have people like that. And you can't just, everybody looks at things, Joe, you know this, like you have to be on one side or the other. You can talk about bringing it together and putting down evil and strengthening, you know, good people. And we just can't do it in America. Maybe around the world, it just won't happen ever again. I don't know.
Yeah, we're in very, polarized times in general, especially here in America right now. And so, yeah, you get the BLM and that movement that's saying, well, like, oh, we're suddenly all in with Palestine. It's like, well, I mean, have you been to the Middle East? Have you talked to a lot of jihadis? They're not exactly the most progressive people. Just throwing that out there. So it just shows how ignorant they are and how easily that is to exploit by the media. But I mean, you know, to your point, you're exactly right. I mean, we don't need to pick this binary choice. I don't see why it's hard for people to condemn the terrorist acts conducted by Hamas. You can say, yeah, are things going swimmingly between the Israelis and the Palestinians? No, that's been an issue for a very long time. And the Israelis have done bad things and the Palestinians have done bad things. I don't think it's too difficult right now, though, to say what's happened, what's transpired in the last couple of days has been an atrocity. And we completely and totally condemn Hamas. Yet some Democrats are having a very hard time doing that. A lot of folks on the left, for some reason, I don't quite know why, are having a very difficult time with doing that. I mean, look, I think something that Biden is going to try to do here in coming up in 2024, they tried to do this a little bit with Ukraine, is they are going to try and say, hey, we need to unify around this new cause in the Middle East, or again, you know, against Putin, against the terrorists. Like the number one way for a weak president, I think, to really prop himself up is to point at another country and say, we need to be unified because this country over here is so dangerous. We need to just unify as Americans to defeat this evil over there. And don't worry about how much money we're spending or how much money all of us leaders are making out this conflict. Yep. Don't be a terrorist sympathizer now. Now you have to be with us. Don't sympathize with Vladimir Putin. Be united around this new American cause. And so I think a lot of healthy skepticism and even healthy division to say like, no, we're not just going with what you say. I mean, look, we had a lot of unity after 9/11. And that was a good thing, but that unity was exploited. We got the Patriot Act. We got sold a false bill of goods of what we were actually doing in Afghanistan. We took our eye off the ball. We let bin Laden completely and totally escape. And the next thing you know, we're hearing about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and we're down this other quagmire. So too much unity can get us to a place where Washington, D.C. and the military-industrial complex really take advantage of us.
Joe, in the last minute or two here, tell us a little bit about your race and what your platform is, because I think I've talked to you a few times a couple of years ago. I love what you've done. I love your message. And again, I think one of your messages you just brought up is one of the most important messages ever of close the freaking border or figure out how to vet what's coming in and out of the border. You talked about that earlier on the show. America just can't seem to get along on that idea that we have to know who's in and out of our country. But tell us a little bit about your race and what your platform is.
Yes, I'm running for Congress, Washington's 3rd Congressional District. I'm running against a very radical Democrat, Marie Perez, and she's voting in lockstep with the Democrats. Everything right now is destroying our country, whether it's the economy, the inflation. She's voted against energy independence. She's voted to continue Biden's insane spending $7 trillion per year, driving us further into debt, more inflation. Inflation right now, at least in Washington 3, it's stealing about $9,000 per year from every single family. People can't afford to live. So I want us energy independent. I want us spending within our means. I want to drive down inflation. I want to bring back manufacturing, deregulate our timber industry. Crime and law and order. We are smack dab, for those who don't know where Washington 3 is. We are just to the north of Portland, Oregon on the Washington side, and then we go kind of right up to the Olympia, Seattle area to the north. So we are right between these failed Democrat-ran sanctuary cities. So the lawlessness that snuck into our own backyard, out of control, a lot of that stems from a wide-open southern border. Our district, our state, is leading the country right now in fentanyl overdoses because of the wide-open southern border. Protection of our kids is another huge issue. The Democrats at the state level, at the federal level, they want to be the primary stakeholder in our kids' education. And I think that's wrong. I think parents are the primary stakeholder in their kids' education. We need to prevent biological men from being able to compete in women's sports. My opponent voted for all that. This doesn't just put men competing against our daughters on the athletic field. This also puts men into their bathrooms and into their locker rooms. Perez voted for this, and the same thing with keeping our border wide open. She voted for that as well. So those are the three big issues, I think, right now that are going to bring people over to the Republican side. Because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, having a secure border, having fiscal responsibility, and making sure our children aren't taken from us by the state or overly sexualized or confused about what gender they are, those didn't used to be just Republican issues. That was actually something that everyone used to agree on. But right now, the Democrat Party has gone so far off the reservation that every single Democrat stands against those. I challenge people all the time. I was like, show me the elected Democrat that will protect our kids, will protect our border, and has some basic understanding of fiscal responsibility. It's impossible. You can't do it. So that's what we're running on right now. I'm endorsed by the Washington State GOP, all the counties in the district. So we've got a lot of Republican unity this time. We're just going to keep pushing hard so we can flip the seat.
These issues used to be black and white issues. They were pretty simple, right? I mean, to your point, crime and criminals should be behind bars, right? We shouldn't be opening our borders. We shouldn't be allowing drug use all over the streets and homeless camps and, you know, boys go in the boys' bathroom, girls go in the girls' bathroom. Pretty simple stuff. Again, black and white issues. We've lost that. And Joe, you bring up Washington. I'm in New York. Guess what? It's here too. It doesn't matter where you go anymore, right? Yep. So, Joe, first off, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate your insight today. That was really great. And I hope our listeners enjoy hearing the reality of the situation. And I'll say the adults in the room, someone like you talking about how it actually is and not just going off of your Twitter page or an Instagram post. So thank you so much for joining us. I hope to do this again sometime. And second off, good luck to you. And I hope you're in office very soon.
Thank you very much, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, until next week, thank you for listening. We will be back next Friday. USA.
Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now. From the land of the free and the brave, USA, I love my country, they can't take that.